Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This is the final weekend to see Looking West, the Rumley Family Collection at Gilcrease Museum. The Rumley Collection is a Tulsa collection of Western American art that encompasses painting, weaving, pottery, and basketry. It combines works from the late 19th century during the last days of the frontier, along with contemporary works that often pay homage to those traditions and artwork. In the exhibit, you'll see historic rugs and blankets alongside contemporary examples of the same. Western artworks from the late 19th century alongside contemporary pieces, some from past Gilcrease Rendezvous artists, which the Rumleys were involved with for many years. Pottery from classic Southwestern centers, and basketry from throughout the native cultures of the West. Looking West closes this Sunday at Gilcrease. I'm joined by Gilcrease's senior curator, Laura Fry, to talk about this show and some of the other exhibits at the museum. The museum is looking at showing their massive collection in new ways prior to a major addition planned for the museum in a couple of years, which will result in the museum closing. Some examples of that would be the Plains Indian art created in community, which opened last month, and textured portraits, the Ken Blackbird collection, which also opened last month. Laura Fry joins me to talk about all of those today. Laura Fry, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
This is a kind of a busy time for Gilcrease. You've had a number of exhibits opening over the last couple of months, and this weekend marks the close of Looking West, the Rumley Family Collection. What is special about this particular collection?
So this is an exhibition we've had on view since December, and it's a private collection from a collector here in Tulsa. It's from Wayne Rumley and his family, and he's a longtime supporter of Gilcrease Museum. And I think what's interesting about this collection is the range of objects that we were able to find from this collection, and it shows how one individual might view this idea of the American West through objects.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a wide range of objects. There are paintings, there are watercolors, rugs, a large rug collection, pottery, basketry, just about every sort of art that we associate with the American West and Native American art as well. So he's an avid collector?
Absolutely. And I think what we can see in this show is how artists from a variety of backgrounds and working with several different media will shape our sense of place. I think it's seeing some of these artworks and some of these rugs and baskets are really what people oftentimes associate with this idea of the American West.
Mm-hmm. When as I was going through the gallery, I think one of the most exceptional works are the two watercolors by Thomas Moran. One is the colors on them are so vivid. And a lot of times when you see Moran watercolors in museums, they've been on the walls a long time and they tend to get faded. These are just exquisite. One is of Mount of the Holy Cross. The other is of Castle Geyser in Yellowstone. And both of these are just exquisite watercolors.
Yes, they're quite beautiful. And I say this is a hat tip to Wayne and to his family. They've taken really good care of these watercolors. When I was looking through his collection, they actually did not currently have them on view. So they're conscious of the fact that these are very light-sensitive objects. And so we're really thrilled to bring them out at Gilcrease Museum. But if you look at these, the details are just impeccable. They're not large, but they're the just perfect details. You get this almost microscopic sense of Thomas Moran's view of Yellowstone. And the image of Castle Geyser includes just a couple of figures. You see like three people on the horizon, and they're tiny. And the people are really there to show how grand the landscape is and to show how vast these natural features are in the American West.
These are like 5x3, 4x6, something about like that. I mean, these are pretty small, aren't they?
Yeah, they're about 8x10.
8x10? Mm-hmm. Okay. But really, the detail for that small of a piece is really amazing.
Absolutely. And for the watercolor of Castle Geyser, Thomas Moran did work with chromolithography and reproduction in the 1870s with some of his Western imagery. I believe this watercolor is the basis for the praying chromolithograph of the same scene. So it's really exciting to see the original watercolor that was used to create this really rich and vivid chromolithograph.
Now, along that same wall, there's a number of miniatures by Henry Farney, who did a lot of those, didn't he? And they're quite beautiful watercolors. and small washes.
Mm-hmm. And this is at the beginning of the exhibition as you first enter the gallery, and these are among the earliest works that were included in this collection. And so I thought this would be a great way to show how artists in the late 19th century and early 19th century were reacting to travel in the West, how they were depicting native cultures or landscapes in the West at that time period.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned earlier the rugs, and the rugs really are amazing. The opening rug you see is a Dine rug from about 1900. It's an eye-dazzling weaving. And there's several eye-dazzling weavings in there, but this is by far the most eye-dazzling, I think.
So when I went to go visit Wayne's collection for the first time, it was this really magical experience. And he showed us some of the paintings, and then he showed us some of his baskets, which were truly fabulous. And then at the end, he showed us his rug collection. And I have never seen a group of Navajo rugs quite like this. They were the scale of them. These were large weavings. They were in perfect condition and incredibly intricate. The colors are really vivid. You can tell that these haven't often been on view because the colors are so bright. They're not faded. And the rug right at the entrance, it's almost neon. It's got orange and bright green, and yellow, really intricate weaving. And it's the detail of these textiles that really drew me in, and the vivid colors. They're just wonderful works of art.
And there's another rug on the far wall of the exhibition, which is quite striking because it's a sort of an unusual weave, I think, the Germantown Moki weaving. It's just these very dark blue, almost, it's not navy blue, but it's sort of a between a normal blue and a navy blue color with the little X's across the middle. And it's has amazing color, and it looks like it's a new rug. And in fact, it's what, 1890?
Yep, that rug's from the 1890s. And it's called a Germantown rug because in the 1890s, as the first train traffic was and the first railroads were really reaching the Southwest, there were new commercial yarns available for weavers on Navajo Nation. And so they were using these really vivid colors for the first time that were not just done from natural dyes, but were the, and many of these yarns were made in Germantown, Pennsylvania. So this rug is likely made with yarn from Pennsylvania using a design, the Moki pattern is inspired by some of the patterns from the Hopi culture. So it's really, this rug, the design and the materials represent a blending of cultures, even a globalization. And it's this just beautiful piece of art. It's almost an indigo or purple background with these red crosses. And it's really in spectacular condition. So it's a wonderful piece.
There's a chief's blanket as well. That's quite a good example of that. And then there's a number of contemporary works, of weaving works, in that same gallery. And a lot of times they're using the same patterns that have been used for, 100 years or more or even longer.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you can see from this collection is the changes over time, but how traditions change, but and how new artists will bring their own ideas to this medium of weaving. One great example is a pictorial rug by Shirley Johns. It's from about 1975. And it shows an entire image of a village. There's about 100 figures in it and a herd of sheep. There's a little horse corral. There's pickup trucks and wagons.
Even a couple jets over ahead.
Yeah, and then there's fighter jets flying through the sky. So there's a little bit of humor involved here, too. It's really clearly this is a modern image. She's not trying to show something from the 1800s, but she's using this traditional technique of weaving to show a very modern image of life on the Navajo Nation and all of the elements it includes, including pickup trucks and airplanes.
There's also another one by Anita Sosi, sand painting design, which I wasn't familiar with that. Can you maybe talk a little bit about what's involved with that particular design?
Sure. I think that particular design is inspired by designs that would have originally been used for sand painting, and mm-hmm. she's taking some of those motifs and rendering them in a weaving. So it's, again, kind of blending media, taking inspiration from one art form and using it for another, and showing how there's this continuity but still new ways of using these images.
Some nice Santa Clara pottery. There's a plate from the Martinez family. And then a jar or vessel from Margaret Tafoya, who I'd never heard of, but in reading about it in the exhibition, this is the other Maria Martinez that sort of made Santa Clara pottery so important.
Yes, there of course there were several matriarchs of pottery in the Southwest in the early 1900s. There was Nampeo of the Hopi Tewa culture. There was Maria Martinez and her husband Julian Martinez of San Ildefonso, and also Margaret Tafoya. So there were many other artists, but these were among the most influential.
And another standout in this exhibition is from the Acoma pottery, and it is this exquisite swirling feather and turtle shell vase by
Toribio, I think.
Toribio.
Yeah. Mike and Jackie Toribio.
Yeah. And this is just an exquisite piece.
Oh, this piece is absolutely spectacular. This is one of those times where I wish we could allow visitors to hold this vase for, you know, insurance reasons, that it's really too delicate. But when you pick it up and hold it, it weighs almost nothing. And it's got this curved base, so it really sits really nicely in your hands. And it's a coil-built vessel, but it's really thin and delicate, so it's almost like eggshell porcelain. And the weightlessness quality of it really adds to the overall experience of this work. And then the surface decoration with a slip design is nearly microscopic geometric lines. And so it's this really beautiful pattern. It's sort of draws you in. It almost appears to be moving because the lines are so fine.
Yeah. And we should mention the basketry. There's not a lot of basketry, but the examples are really quite beautiful.
Yes, it was really difficult to narrow down which baskets to include in this exhibition because the Rumley family has some amazing examples of baskets. And primarily these baskets are late 19th or early 20th century. But they're located, they were from cultures based in the Southwest, California, the Pacific Northwest, and even Alaska. And so it's this incredible geographic range, lots of different materials, lots of different weaving styles. You'll see some absolutely wonderful examples. Some of my favorite from the basket collection are a couple of pomo baskets from Northern California that include feathers in the weaving. And as you might imagine, these are pretty delicate. These types of objects, they're susceptible to insects. They're light sensitive. And these examples are just in pristine condition.
Now, we talked about some of the paintings in the first room, but there are paintings throughout the exhibit, some from, say, the Taos and Mexico schools, Martin Hennings Among the Aspens. It's a very good example of his work. Kaus's Indian by the Lake is a little different than you're used to seeing. It's the same sort of, it's just the colors are a little different. It's a far darker painting than you usually see with some of Kaus's work.
Yeah, he did. He often worked with these nocturne scenes or moonlit scenes with these greens and blues, very calm, kind of cool colors. And I think a lot of those scenes you might see a lot of influence from Art Nouveau design from the early 20th century from Europe. So he's taking this idea of Art Nouveau and sort of transporting it to the American Southwest.
Now, the Rumleys, I guess, have been involved with Rendezvous for a number of years at Gilcrease, and that's also apparent too, because you see a lot of Rendezvous artists in some of the later rooms, and they're really fine examples of contemporary Western American art. Probably one of the standouts to me were the four sort of Western genre paintings by Frank McCarthy, just because those are so evocative of Hollywood, and I don't know who influenced who, but it's kind of a mutual influence, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank McCarthy was a member of the Cowboy Artists of America, and this was a group that formed in 1965, and they considered themselves to be rebels. They thought they were rebelling against modern art. While the modern artists maybe thought they were rebelling initially, now the cowboy artists were rebelling against the modernists. And they wanted to go back to creating work that was evocative of Frederick Remington and Charlie Russell. Many of them were based in Sedona or in Arizona. And Frank McCarthy adopted this photorealist style, which is interesting because as he was doing this photorealist style of history paintings of the American West, it's when photorealism was also a major movement in New York. So he's certainly aware of what was happening in the larger art world. But his images show this idealized, action-packed place that really is showing this idea of adventure and excitement in the American West in this really pristine photographic sense, and they do. They look like film stills, and they look like adventure film stills. There's no sense of a darker side of history in his images. It's this really idealized image of the West.
It's Saturday afternoon of the movies.
Absolutely, or it's Gunsmoke. I mean, these are certainly inspired, might be inspired by Hollywood, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they also influenced Hollywood and Hollywood's depictions of the West.
My guest today is Laura Fry, senior curator at Gilcrease Museum, talking about some of the things going on at Gilcrease. This is your last weekend to see Looking West. The Rumley family collection closes this Sunday at Gilcrease. And we should mention, you were talking about how these artists were sort of rebelling against modernism in Western art. There's a wonderful little show from the Gilcrease collection, permanent collection, Creating the Modern Southwest, which is mainly Gilcrease pictures, some of which are very familiar if you go to the museum. Others are not familiar. They haven't been on the walls in a while, and some are a couple of loans from the Tulsa Public Schools, including the very first image when you walk into that gallery, Berger Sanson's Old Cedar.
Yes, the show Creating the Modern Southwest was a chance to show how artists that are part of our permanent collection at Gilcrease Museum were, in fact, influenced by modern art in the early 20th century. And many of them studied in New York or studied in Europe when modernism was really coming to the forefront. And they took these ideas to the Southwest and started creating a distinct style of American artwork and working in many different styles in New Mexico and in Arizona. And this show is a great chance to feature some of our favorites from the Gilcrease, but also to bring out some works that we've never had on view before.
What are some of the ones that really haven't been shown in some time? I was thinking of what I consider one of the best pieces in the show is The Mojave Desert by Ernest Blumenschein, which is dark, but it's utterly modernist.
Absolutely. The Mojave Desert is this really deep purple landscape of, you know, the Purple Mountain Majesties, you might think of. But it's this purple peak against a yellow sky, a dawn, a sunrise. And it's got this wonderful interplay of complementary colors with the yellow and the purple. And it's very geometric. It's really reduced this landscape to its basic elements.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly you'll see Antelope Head with Pedernal. That's from the mountain in New Mexico. That's been sort of on the walls a while at the George O'Keefe. Indian Art by the Highway by John Sloan. The Fremont Ellis. There's a Fremont Ellis that's been displayed. But there are a few pieces at Gregorita by Robert Henry. Mm-hmm. But a couple of local artists that have local ties, Oscar Jacobson's His White Shadow Among the Navajos, and Dole Reed's Bear Canyon. These are two beautiful examples. Again, there are these Western themes, but when you look at the backgrounds and some of the other things, they're very modernist, and they're obviously influenced by modernism.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I wanted to make sure we included in this show is to include Native artists working in the Southwest as well, because when you look at a Maria Martinez vase from the 1920s, her designs were very related to Art Deco design in that era, and her geometry, her polished surfaces absolutely look like they're part of the modern era. And so it's not just artists who were traveling to New Mexico from other places, it's also artists that were born there and that were from that area originally.
Yeah. Now, that will be up for a while. And it might be a good time to talk about, you know, the museum is preparing for a major addition, which will, I believe, is going to take place around 2020. Construction. The museum's going to be closed for a couple of years. As senior curator, you've been there for a while now, what are you trying to do with the collection as far as featuring this vast collection? We have to admit, a vast majority, which is in storage at any given time. How are you trying to freshen it up and see new ways of seeing this collection?
One initiative we've taken to try and make our collections more accessible is our online collections at Gilcrease Museum. Mm-hmm. If you go to collections.gilcrease.org, you can see about 20,000 objects from our collection that are digitized and available online. And of course, that's still a fairly small percent of our overall collection, but many of our most important works are there. And we're going to keep adding to that as well. So that's one way that we're really bringing the works out to the light. And also, we're working to refresh some of our permanent exhibition spaces over this next year. In June, we're going to be changing out some of the works in our main Native American exhibition in Enduring Spirit. And coming up this fall, we'll be redoing one of our hallway areas to create more of a Gilcrease sculpture hall and bring some new works out that perhaps haven't been on view before. So we're looking to maybe experiment with some new exhibition ideas in the next 2 years before we close to the public for renovation, and thinking about what might we do when we reopen after this expansion.
Yeah. Now, when you're closed, you're also, I assume the plan is to travel some of the collection too, to really expose the world to the Gilcrease collection.
Yes, when we're close to the public, that's an excellent opportunity to travel some of our most beloved works and some of the works that we normally would want to have on view at the museum. So we'll be looking for some opportunities to do a traveling exhibition from the Gilcrease collection.
Yeah. Now, we should mention in our remaining time, there's a couple of new exhibits which opened just last month, and that's a anthropology exhibit of Plains Indian art created in community, which really is very much featured on the objects. We think of them as art today, but they thought of them as work objects and clothing and the like that's a part of that. Can you talk a little bit about that exhibit?
Sure. This exhibition's very exciting for us. It's an initial exhibition to come to fruition that's based on some of the research generated by the Helmerich Center for American Research. So this exhibit was put together by three guest curators, by Gaylord Torrance, Emma Hansen, and David Penny, and they each bring a slightly different perspective to these objects. So as you go through the exhibition and read some of the panels and some of the labels, sometimes they're approached from an art history perspective, and from an art perspective, some of them are approached more from an anthropology perspective. So they deliberately wanted both of those views of these objects throughout the exhibition. And so we also wanted to emphasize, even if we don't know the name of the artist who completed a particular piece there, that these were done by recognized artists in their communities. And so it's an interesting way to look at the artistry of the work and also at how these objects were used. And then we conclude with some two-dimensional work from the Gilcrease collection showing how some of these traditions are now being used in very new ways by modern artists and contemporary artists.
Right. And there's also a number of pictographs that are part of the show as well. The whole gallery of pictographs, I assume that's contemporaneous from events of the late 19th century?
Yes, we have a room dedicated to White Swan, who was a painter, and he was a veteran of the Battle of Little Bighorn. But he also was wounded during that battle, and he lost his ability to speak. And so his main way of expressing himself became his paintings. So because he could not communicate very well outside of his painting, we have a challenge with trying to figure out what some of these images mean. And there's been some really exciting research lately that that Duane King has done, the director of the Helmerich Center for American Research. He's been doing some research on what some of these motifs in these paintings mean and shedding some new light on this really incredible artist's work.
I notice as I look at the schedule over the next couple of years before the museum closes, a lot of the exhibitions will be in conjunction with the Helmerich Center. Mm-hmm. How does that add to the understanding of not only the Gilcrease collection, but of what you're trying to communicate to visitors about the experience at Gilcrease?
Well, it's exciting because we have this incredible library collection and archive with Gilcrease that I think maybe isn't as well known as some of our most famous artworks. And the Helmerich Center is actively bringing outside scholars to the Gilcrease to help us understand what we have in our library, to take a fresh look at some of the anthropology or the artworks in our collection. And so we're getting some great outside perspectives and additional perspectives on this collection and perhaps bringing new objects to light, bringing a new interpretations of these objects to light. And then we can use that new information to inform our exhibitions. And that's what the Plains show is a result of that collaboration. And we have an upcoming show opening at the end of August on the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And that show is also informed by a variety of outside scholars.
Now, there's one other exhibit which also opened last month, which is it's a good size exhibition, but it's I think it's a prelude to another exhibition. But textured portrait, the Ken Blackbird collection.
Yes, this is a contemporary photography collection by the photographer Ken Blackbird, and he's an Assiniboine photographer who, until recently, lived in Cody, Wyoming. I think he's now based in the Pacific Northwest, but he has spent the last couple of decades photographing contemporary life on the Northern Plains and particularly showing different aspects of Northern Plains cultures, of Crow, Assiniboine, looking at Lakota cultures, Cheyenne. And his photography is from rodeos, from the Crow Fair, from daily life on various reservations. It's also from Native American events in Washington, D.C. It's some of the landscapes in Montana and Wyoming. And so it's a pretty interesting contemporary look at tribal culture in the Northern Plains. And we thought this would be a great complement to the historic material in our Plains Indian Art exhibition.
Mm-hmm. And what strikes you as some of the strongest images in the photography exhibit?
So one of the types of events that Ken will photograph are powwows today, and mm-hmm. he has some beautiful images that show just the range of motion and color from contemporary powwows. You know, the neon regalia, these really vivid modern colors and materials that are now part of powwow celebrations and powwow dances. And those are, I think, among the most beautiful images.
All right. Well, sounds like there's a lot of things going on at Gilcrease. And one of the things I noticed just from being a couple of months from my last visit is how many things have changed in the galleries. You're moving things around. Is it a conscious policy by you to get some things that haven't been shown in some time out on the walls?
Well, absolutely. We're hoping to keep Gilcrease a dynamic institution. If you haven't been in a couple months and you come to visit, you'll see something new on display. And part of that is we have a really deep collection. There is so much that we have in our vaults. And so if we do more frequent refreshes to our permanent galleries, we're able to show you more of this wonderful treasure that we have here in Tulsa. And also, you know, the Gilcrease didn't have a curator for a couple years. And so I'm working with our curator of history, Mark Dolph, and we're working to refresh some of the spaces that maybe hadn't had much attention in a couple of years, too. So it's a way to showcase the best that we have in our collection and to keep a good variety going.
All right. Well, you can learn more at gilcrease.org. Laura, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Laura Fry is the senior curator at Gilcrease Museum. Looking West, the Rumley Family Collection closes this Sunday at the museum, while the Plains Indian Art and Textured Portraits exhibit continue through August. Next month, the museum will open two exhibits devoted to the centennial of the Great War, World War I. Both are devoted to graphic arts in support of the war effort. Black Bodies in Propaganda, the Art of the War poster, which examines the way African Americans were motivated to fight for societies, both American and European, that denied them many basic rights, and The Power of Posters, Mobilizing the Home Front to Win the Great War, which will look at the various ways American propaganda was used to unite the country in the war effort. Both of those exhibits open April 7th. For more information about all the exhibits at Gilcrease, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.